Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to another important episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find all the pertinent information available at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, we'll begin with a story that has not gotten a lot of attention, and we'll take it from a posting on my own CyberspaceWar.com. Massive cyber attack on U.S. banks allegedly came from the Middle East. The hackers behind the cyber attacks on major U.S. banks have repeatedly disrupted online banking by using sophisticated and diverse tools that point to a carefully coordinated campaign, according to security researchers. The hackers, believed to be activists in the Middle East, were highly knowledgeable about the defensive equipment used by the banks and likely spent months on reconnaissance, said several researchers interviewed by Reuters, who viewed the assaults as among the strongest and most complex the world has seen to date. In the past 2 weeks, customers of top U.S. banks, including Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Bancorp, PNC, and more, have reported having trouble accessing their websites, and unusually high traffic volumes appear to crash or slow down their systems. No thefts have been tied to the hacked sites, but an untold number of customers were not able to pay bills or transfer money from their computers, leaving banks with remediation expenses and customer irritation as the biggest costs. Now, James, to flesh this story out, and again, this is one of those stories you kind of have to go looking for the information. An interesting piece from Pack Alert Press, cyber attack on U.S. banks is obvious false flag, where they note they wrote an article a few weeks ago called "The New World Order Agenda Would Move Forward with This One Simple Act," that stated that the one event that could accomplish all of the agenda's goals would be a false flag cyber attack on Western banking institutions that they could pin on Iran. And now we get to the heart of it. So, James, what are the possibilities that Iran, so angry, and the Muslims so angry about this Innocence of the Muslims video, that they hatched this amazing cyber attack? These would be the same people who were essentially destroyed by Stuxnet. And who made Stuxnet, James?
Was it the U.S. and Israel? Oh, I think it was. No, exactly right. This is exactly what we've been talking about here on New World Next Week for years now, literally years, the cyber false flag attack, because it fits so many different parts of this agenda so nicely, doesn't it? It gets to give the excuse for them to crack down on the internet, and of course it gives the excuse to declare war on Iran, outright war, and it would just put all those pieces together. And obviously we haven't seen that particular event yet, but we have we're now seeing the pieces of that puzzle coming together, and all it would take is some sort of massive, you know, downing of the banks or whatever they're going to do that they can blame everything on. They can blame the economic collapse on. They can then use it to go to war. They can use it to blame internet freedoms. It fits so perfectly, and it is will all come together with that punch in the Facebook, as we've talked about, when you hit people where it counts, somewhere in their bank book or whatever it might be. But absolutely, it's just so many pieces of this puzzle, and because it's that cyber online event, they can blame it on whoever they want, and we just have to take their word for it, because how can we say otherwise?
That's what Webster Tarpley called virtual flag terrorism. And James will provide the flashback link to our own episode back on August 2nd covering the flash crash night. And that was the last time we specifically covered this kind of cyber banking events. Our second story stays on technology, but oh, it's much, much yummier, James. Posted again on my own foodworldorder.com. Nestle embeds GPS trackers in candy bars to hunt down eaters. Now, that's the headline from popsci.com, and that's where I take the posting. And, of course, the use of the term eaters immediately struck me. Oh, like useless eaters, like Ted Turner said? Customers buying Kit Kat bars in the United Kingdom could be unwrapping a 21st century version of Willy Wonka's Golden Ticket, a GPS unit the candy maker will use to find them, apprehend them, and give them a prize. Nestle claims to be the first to market its chocolatey wares with a GPS-based promotion. The somewhat sinister-sounding "We Will Find You" campaign will place a GPS-enabled bar inside four versions of Kit Kats. Inside the wrapper, it would look exactly like a regular Kit Kat, according to the York Press newspaper, which is from the town where Nestle just happens to be based. When the would-be snacker pulls a tab to open the wrapper, the GPS device will turn on, which will notify the company. Then a prize team will locate this person within 24 hours and hand him or her a check for £10,000, about $16,000. Nestle said they devised the campaign to appeal to men who presumably like GPS technology. It's backing the marketing blitz with TV ads and a smartphone campaign wherein users are supposed to scan QR codes on KitKat ads or use NFC-equipped phones to enter an online competition. While Nestle may be the first to do this with candy, they're not the first to use GPS to track their customers. As Network World points out, multinational soap and ice cream supplier, that's the same company that makes your soap, makes your ice cream, Unilever added a GPS device to a box of laundry soap it sells in Brazil and stalked 50 shoppers to their front doors to give them prizes. Soda, fast food, and candy wrappers always have some kind of contest running, but those usually rely on the consumer to notice the special winning code or wrapper and go get the prize. Tracking people down is definitely an entirely different concept, James.
It certainly is. I don't think you have to go too far out on a limb to explain why this is particularly creepy, but I just do not understand how this can possibly be legal. I mean, can companies just put these things in and track you like a dog? I mean, are people allowed to do that? I would have assumed there would have been laws against that type of thing, but then again, when it comes to this cyber age we're living in, I suppose anything goes. And if that story doesn't creep you out, then I guess we really have breached that line where we can never go back and never regain our sense of what privacy is. But yes, absolutely. I'm sure, you know, I mean, we'd have to be naive to think that this sort of thing isn't already going on in to a greater or lesser extent. But when they roll out the agenda like this, they can familiarize us with the concept so that they can start to roll it out on a bigger scale. So I'm sure eventually we will have trackers in all sorts of different products. And we already do with the RFID chips that are embedded in many products these days. It's a form of tracking device. And now we're just being sort of introduced to the concept. Oh, you can win a prize. I mean, is there any limit to what people will not do in the name of winning a prize? And I think we're going to find out in the next few decades as the technology becomes more and more Orwellian.
I speculate maybe there's the small print on the candy bar that says, you know, by purchasing this, you agree that we may track you if it's got the GPS code in there.
Unless that's on, you know, 90-point font all completely covering the front, I think that wouldn't be enough of a warning. But who knows what legal tricks they use to do this.
I would definitely implore folks to go check out the 30-second advert that I've included on this post on Food World Order, as well as a flashback to 2011 from naturalnews.com. Scientists push to implement edible RFID tracking chips in food and call it the NutraSmart system. Do you remember that story, James?
Vaguely, but it doesn't surprise me that they're trying to put the smart label on it.
Now, as we have quickly moved to our third and final story this week, by the time you guys are watching this, the first WrestleMania phony Bud Bowl fake fight, call it what you want, will have happened here in the States. Yes, the interminable presidential selection process is ramping up as we enter the final godforsaken month. So knowing that minds are cast and are paying attention to the Obamney fakery, let's get into a little bit of action that you may not be familiar with from Reason. Presidential debates lose sponsors over the exclusion of third-party candidates. The Commission on Presidential Debates, the CPD, a bipartisan project of the Republican and Democratic parties, was established, at least in part, to make sure that major party presidential candidates would be unlikely to suffer the indignity of sharing a stage with an outsider. The effort hasn't been completely successful. Ross Perot actually managed to meet the CPD's nearly prohibitive criteria for inclusion in 1992, But the two parties now have a lot more control over the ritualistic meetings between their chosen contenders than they did back in the wild and woolly days when they might be thrown curveballs by such unpredictable loose cannon debate hosts of the past as the League of Women Voters. And I think it should be noted that after Ross Perot made it in 92, I believe, we'll have to add this information, Clinton and Dole, the two selections for 96, both basically colluded to say, hey, let's ramp up the rules and make it even more difficult. So then, of course, in the 96 presidential selections in the states, there were no wild cannon, you know, loose cannon third party candidates. Continuing, though, that stage-managed private club quality taken on by the CPD's debates may not be working out exactly in their favor this year, with three debate sponsors pulling out explicitly to avoid being seen as endorsing Republicans and Democrats at the expense of candidates from other political parties. The three are Philips North America, the lighting and technology company, the YWCA, whose slogan, of course, is empowering women, eliminating racism, and BBH New York, an arm of the international Bartle, Bogle, and Haggerty advertising agency. So third-party supporters, Gary Johnson backers in particular, as well as advocates of open debates, have leaned on the CPD especially hard this year. Part of their effort has been to put pressure on the sponsors. And that tactic is obviously working to some degree. James, we'll add a related note, a editorial on Kaleo.org, Obamney versus Gary Johnson, where they ask, have you heard of New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson? If the answer is no, you are probably not alone. James?
Well, there was a time in which I would have been interested in a story like this, but I am totally off the treadmill, and I just do not believe in the government election cycle anymore as a way of achieving change or a way of accomplishing anything in our society. So, third party, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that are excited by Gary Johnson as the lesser of three evils, but personally, I'm just not interested in it because government is still inherently evil. Nothing from Washington or London or Ottawa or Tokyo or wherever you happen to live is going to be the answer. The answer starts in the mirror and starts with you. So I'm just not excited about electoral politics, and I can't believe we have another month of this. It seems like it's been dragging on for decades now. And whether it's Obamney or, hey, Gary Johnson or whoever gets in, it's still government and it's still inherently evil. So I'm not going to support it. And I hope other people out there are coming to that realization too.
I had a friend when I was visiting my hometown last month. One of the first things he asked me, he was like, man, who should I vote for? And I immediately kind of cracked up. I was like, dude, I think the only thing you can do that you won't regret is if you just write your own name in. And that's the thing. You ultimately, and that's what it's all about. You know, it takes attention away from what's going on in your own backyard because you're paying attention to the big phony show. Meanwhile, you can actually affect change in your own neighborhood by getting involved in those elections.
That's one idea, but I'm completely off government altogether. But but whatever your idea out there is, I hope that you're not caught up in this spectacle and hype, because that's all it ultimately amounts to. James, tell us what's going on in Ground Zero.
Well, it's interesting. Monday night's show, and Ground Zero is the new nationally syndicated show I now work on here in Portland, Oregon. Monday night's episode, I think, was an amazing research piece into scopolamine, which is also called devil's breath. And it's come out that they were using it on detainees in Gitmo. And you can go down the crazy kind of occult, blow the devil's breath in someone's face and they'll essentially become your zombie. And you can go down that crazy path, but you can also look at some of the people involved in scopolamine or Baxter Pharmaceuticals. Oh, Obama has a bunch of stock in Baxter. Oh, Obama, as soon as he came into office, was pushing the swine flu agenda. And it's come out now that they were using it on detainees at Gitmo. And wouldn't you know it, one of the guys who had been in Gitmo got out and was involved in the Libya attack. So that's food for thought. And folks who want to learn more, check out groundzeromedia.org. James, we are pretty much out of time. I appreciate doing New World next week with you so much, man.
Looking forward to it next week. Take care.
Thanks.